What's up, y'all? Kelly Clarkson with Wayfair. My favorite thing about the holidays? Decking out my whole house. It's not a competition, but if it was, well, I'd win the season with Wayfair. Outdoor inflatable Santa? Got it on Wayfair. Trees, lights, and ornaments? Wayfair. Hosting must-haves like dining sets, beds, sheets, and towels? Wayfair. For everything in your style delivered with fast and free shipping, visit Wayfair.com or the Wayfair app to win the season. But again, it's not a competition.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
There's a hologram that looks after the weapons, engineering, hospitality, but apparently not one for whatever drunk Raffi is doing.
I'm so confused!
Captain's Pod, Stardate 118202.7. Hello and welcome aboard the Starship's Enterprise, and thank you for joining us as we take a brief shore leave from the world of CinemaSins to explore the universe of Star Trek. I'm your captain, Ian Whittington, and with me, as always, is the... Oh no, I forgot to do an introduction for you.
That's the strangest name for a ship I have ever heard.
The continuum-bending ambassador, Danae Hughes.
Ooh, that sounds special. I think I figured something out. Point seven. Is that because it's the seventh episode?
No. It's not. Good guess. Keep guessing. And if anybody can guess how my Stardate system works, email captainspod@cinemasins.com and you will get a prize.
Okay.
Some sort. I don't know.
Oh, wow. Oh, that's a big promise. What are you going to send people, Ian?
To be confirmed. But while I decide that...
He's lying to you, people.
No, it's fine.
Lying. No, remember this when you're voting on your favorite person on the show later on.
Wait, no, they don't know about the vote. They don't know that there's a vote for who. They do now. Yeah, you out of the two of us, you have to vote who's your favorite, me, because I'm going to be here the longest. So deal with it.
It's your show.
Danae, can you do me a quick favor? Can you just go over to that panel over there and just press the big red button?
Oh, yeah, sure. Pam.
Albert Hogan is with us. Hello, Albie.
Hello. Permission to board this Enterprise, Captain?
Permission granted. Did you notice that I gave you permission and the captain didn't? Because I actually outrank him. Hi, I'm ambassador.
Yeah, you should have addressed yourself to the ambassador. So, yes, we have a very special guest this week to help us digest and pull apart this episode 7 of Picard. Albie, tell us a bit about yourself and why we love you so much.
Hi, so good to be here. So I'm Albie. I am a lifelong Trekkie, and my life is longer than Ian's, so therefore I'm a bigger Trekkie than he is. And I was around for the original run of TNG, so I grew up with it literally as it was being aired, which was pretty awesome, which I think you were as well, Danae, am I right in saying that?
I think so.
So a bit like you, I used to run home from school to watch it, and it basically made me the man I am today. So much so, it actually influenced me to go into the world of entertainment. So I have worked in film and TV and got to do some of the behind-the-scenes stuff, which is really fun, mainly on the kind of marketing side. So, you know, I've worked with Disney and Universal and continue to work in entertainment to this day, but in audio entertainment now. So the bold new frontier.
So cool.
So here I am.
Yeah, that's amazing.
Here I am to counsel the ambassador and the captain who are at loggerheads, I believe.
Yeah, that's right. Albie listened to us and thought, I can't take any more of this. These two are arguing too much, and Ian is hedging his bets and not saying what he really feels. Imagine if I was.
Well, you should. You should let loose. If you're holding back, you should let loose.
You raise some good points, and it makes me feel overly defensive.
Yeah, that's the problem, isn't it? Danae, you're just too logical and too on the money for him to argue with, and that is a skill that is rare.
Right, hang on.
Counselor
is meant to be neutral. I feel like the neutral zone is being violated.
I'm being provocative on person to see how you react.
Oh, no.
So what's an example of a time when you've had an opinion that you've changed because of something that I've said, because I'm clueless?
I think Well, first off, I think they should have called them Borgulans, because I really liked that.
Yes.
Obvious.
They're the best.
And I hadn't quite realised, which I know you've made the point as well, Ian, just how exposition-y episode 3-2 is.
Two and three. Yeah.
To the point that after listening to that particular episode of the pod, I went back and watched it and I was like, oh my God, it's literally like they're throwing stuff at us. So what's been interesting for me is to hear the perspective of, you know, writers and people who do this day in, day out. So I think there's an awful lot of logic to what you're saying. And at times it makes me sad, but at times I'm like, oh, that's actually quite clever. And at times I want to argue back. So it should be interesting to see where we go today.
Oh, I can't wait. That's great.
Me too.
I've had exactly the same experience watching it with Danae. And I think it just shows how admittedly rose-tinted our spectacles were when we watched it. Like, we were so hungry for more of this era of Star Trek. And to have a fresh pair of eyes come at it and just go, "What? This isn't how you make a TV show. What's happening?" And we're like, oh no, you're right.
Yeah,
and I can't argue with that.
Yeah, and I think the biggest revelation is Picard's a bit of a dick at times.
Yeah, arrogant.
Arrogant.
Yeah. He really is. Yeah, I think his ego is more on display. And I think it's purposeful. And it's a little painful.
Yeah.
Because I genuinely felt like we were going to be jumping into a show and it was going to be like, all hail the conquering hero. And it's not. It's like, let's bury this character, but also still he's great, but also let's bury him.
It's so funny. Bury him, but still do everything he says. Like, everyone still follows his every whim, but still brings him down a peg. Yeah, it's interesting.
Sheer fucking hubris.
That's what was said.
That summed it up.
So, okay. We last episode, where did we leave off?
Soji woke up and went crazy. Picard and Soji run to escape the cube.
The party is split.
Yeah, the party is split. Okay. So, are we ready to watch episode 7?
I think so.
Yes.
Let's do it. Okay, with that, we'll see you guys for a full debrief in 10 forward after we have watched episode 7. 3 to beam out. Welcome to 10 Forward, the part of the show where we grab a drink from the replicator and share our immediate thoughts and feelings on the episode we just watched together. Guests first, Albie, what is your beverage of choice?
Ooh, I think I will have a Sumerian sunset today, please.
Oh, good choice, sir. Good choice.
And maybe a bit of raw cake blood pie to go with it as well.
Oh, a bold, bold combination, sir. Danae, Ambassador Danae, what would you like? Or would you like to share some of Albie's?
I'll share some of Albie's, please. I'm having, like, instant coffee.
Any earth beverage, please.
Oh, no. I was actually, so last night I was watching a episode of Columbo.
Why?
Okay.
I can't tell you why. It was on TV, and I just got sucked into it because it's such a different way of telling a story than I'm used to seeing now. Like, yeah, it's just so old school.
So
I was
slow.
Really fascinated by it, and I couldn't stop watching it until the end. And they had some, like, they had like a Shirley Temple in it. I was like, oh my God, Shirley Temple. So maybe I'll do a Shirley Temple as my imaginative drink, but my actual drink is straight up just like instant coffee.
Nice. Mm-hmm. Very nice. Shatner turns up in an episode of Columbo. There's our segue back to Star Trek.
Hey.
There you go. Hey.
So
what are you drinking, Ian?
What am I drinking? I am drinking gah.
Drinking gah?
Yep, it's blended.
Okay, is this like some sort of protein shake type
health
thing?
Kick.
Right, okay.
I got live gah and then I blended it into a smoothie.
Right, new year, new you, but Star Trek stuff.
Yeah,
I like it.
I don't like it. I haven't enjoyed a single glass of it yet. It wasn't quite dead.
The best gah is wriggling when you have it, so...
Best served live. So, the episode we just watched, episode 7, Nepenthe, Picard and Soji, who's struggling to make sense of her recently unlocked memories, travel to a planet that homes Picard's old friends Will Riker and Deanna Troi. Woo! Elnor and Hugh are left on the Borg cube to face Nerissa, while the crew of the La Serena have difficulty eluding Narek. Does Agnes know more than she lets on? Right. First of all, Danae... How awesome was it to see Will and Deanna?
Oh, this is my favorite episode. I think I said that about last episode, but this is my favorite episode, 100%.
It has to be, doesn't it? So were you happy to dive straight into it? Were you happy with how it was handled and how they did it?
Yeah. Yeah, I think that they did a lot of right things in this one. Even with the backstory of, you know, showing the conversation between O and Agnes to give validation to how they're being tracked, to the struggle that Agnes is going through with her her role that she now has, like all of that is working. And then you have like this wonderful part of the show that we've all been knowing is going to happen, which is more guest appearances. And of course, I was really curious if Riker was coming back. So for Riker and Troy to be together, that was super fun.
Yeah.
You had kids into the mix and you're like, this little girl is adorable. Like, oh, how cute is she? Best.
So did you not know that they were married?
No. How would I know? No, how would I know that?
So that happens in Nemesis. They get married. I'm so sorry, but I'm actually glad. I'm glad I didn't tell you. They get married in the last TNG film, but that's a really good surprise. Okay. Did you guess that they were going to be here? At what point did you think this is their planet?
Well, I think wasn't my prediction last episode that he's going to go see one of his crew members because it makes him feel safe, and I assumed it was going to be Riker.
Mm-hmm. You absolutely guessed that it was going to be Riker, and then you kind of was like, well, maybe it's Geordi, but nah, it's going to be Riker.
The only one that really makes sense is Riker. So I thought that they set that up really well. I thought that they did really good world building with Nepenthe. They did good backstory building with Deanna and Riker. Like, that was really interesting too. It didn't seem like it took up too much space. It seemed like all, even like the mentions of real things was intentional. Soji had a good moment where she's trying to figure out what's real to her. That paced really, really well. The only part that I really wasn't, I understand that we need to go ahead and bring the Hugh Borg cube, you know, stuff to a close. That felt a little clunky to me. More
it's a
clunky
third
than
location
the rest
we
of
didn't
it.
Need, wasn't it?
It's gotta kind of end, and I get that. But I felt like I had questions about why they decided to do some of the things that they did with this one. Overall, I was in it.
Yes.
I was in it, and I don't know. It was just so cool. Like the little hug at the end when they're all embracing.
All of the hugs. Like, there's so much hugs and kissing in this. I love it.
It's a visual representation of what we all like as fans want to be doing.
We all wanted to hug them. Yeah, absolutely. What were your thoughts, Alvy? Did you when you first watched it? Did you like it?
Oh yeah. I mean, I teared up then when I watched it, and I teared up again now just because. Like, there is such an authentic display of love between those characters. Like, even just to show two straight male characters hugging and kissing each other and giving each other advice is just, like...
Yeah.
That's one thing that Trek has always done well, is, like, male friendship. So that was really good to see. Got totes emote when I saw Deanna. I think Marina Sirtis was on fire in this episode. Is probably her best acting,
best she's been
ever.
Holy shit.
Like, amazing.
Like, the emotion in her eyes and how it kind of goes dead a couple times when she's shutting it down. I was like, oh man, you can see it.
Yeah,
it's so good.
Yeah, but I kind of want Kestra to be my daughter because she's so cool.
She's so cute.
She is
so,
so
independent. She just is a little forest girl. She's great.
And dare I say, I think she's probably the best written character in the show.
Yes. She's probably got the most complete arc, hasn't she?
I kind of want Kestra and Captain Crandall adventures as a separate show.
That would be amazing.
Do we get to see Captain Crandall? Is this happening?
No.
What? No! Hold on. Wait,
we would have
what?
Done had Rios not picked them up, because that was the next destination, but the La Serena catches up. So, no, we don't see Crandall.
Oh, that's so strange, because it's like referenced when they first, when Soji and Picard first land, and she's like, oh, I picked this, you know, what was it? The compass up from, what, didn't she say that it was the captain?
Yeah, Captain Crandall gave it to her.
So,
yeah.
Mentioned multiple times, and Captain Crandall is also able to apparently pull up information for her, like in a text message, like, hey, you know a planet that does this, and he's like, yeah, blah blah blah, or she or they.
My logic behind that was that Riker, this is obviously somebody that Riker has worked with, and this is Kestra's link back to Starfleet. So she doesn't have to be a woodland girl. She can follow a career in Starfleet if she wants. So maybe Riker has cultivated that relationship with him, but or her. But yeah, it is weird that we never see them in this season, at least.
That is absolutely
that's
fucking bonkers. Yeah.
I would have fully bet
that this was going to be something important because it was the way that it was mentioned, but it's just an information MacGuffin, I guess. That's...
Oh, totally. Yeah. It's a way for her to know where the planet is.
I kind of prefer to him actually being like a character in the episode just to kind of reveal that piece of information at the end. So I actually quite like the way it's done. Although I'm slightly perturbed by like whatever Kestra being what 10, 11, just like randomly IMing some old dude in a town. Like,
Just hanging out at the docks.
There's so much more here. She's a kid talking to this very experienced pilot captain person or whatever. Yeah. If Crandall isn't brought up in an upcoming Star Trek universe explosion, like Kestra has to be involved. She has to, like, they have to bring this character back to life in new content with Crandall. You're absolutely right.
Yeah. So there'll now be a we book, have, I guarantee
we
it.
We need to see the X-Pack, the XPs
and the Fenris Rangers.
The Fenris Rangers, and we need to see Captain Crandall and Kestra Adventures. That's amazing. The three things that we need to see.
Three spin-offs. Let's do it.
The one thing that made me happy about this, because I haven't actually watched this episode since like probably the summer last year, is the conversation that Kestra and Soji have about androids was basically the conversation you two had in episode one, which is like... mucus and saliva, and remember you talking about what happens with, do they go pee, do they have periods, you know, all this stuff.
Yeah,
so that's what I love. It's like Kestra's almost like a little bit of a an avatar for us in that she's kind of asking those questions that we're kind of scratching our head in the real world.
Yeah, and I had to tiptoe around that so much because I was like, I don't know. Why would they? Isn't that peculiar? Hot damn.
And I just love the way that Kestra explains it. It makes sense that Data would do that. And that is the perfect way to just like shut that down.
Yeah, I guess. It's perfect.
I guess, yeah, because you want to see, you know, he wanted to be able to tear up. Like even Soji's tear in this one that she experiences, it just kind of like zooms in on her tear almost. It doesn't really zoom in, but there's like this, her cheek is sort of front and center to camera and she's got this one single tear. And I'm like, that's an android's tear.
Yeah, it is.
That makes it unique and interesting.
I did quite enjoy as well though that you and Riker seem, and when I say you, I mean Danae and Riker seem to have some skills in common because much like you, Danae, Riker is able to put small bits of information together and figure out the entire plot.
Oh yeah, major sin moment on that one for me.
Like, but you got far more with far less.
Yeah. That's Sindanae.
I mean, thank you.
Guessing like the androids and the destruction of the universe and stuff. Yeah, you are. I would be sinning how much you know. There's no way you got there.
I don't know. Yeah, he did make some pretty big leaps.
Okay, well, we'll get to that in engineering. For me, I loved it. Like, I knew they were coming. I knew it was going to be this episode. It had been teased enough. I knew the planet that they were going to be on. I knew the name of it. But it was amazing. It was perfect. Like, yes, I want to see Riker in command. I want to see him in Starfleet. But this was perfect. To see, this is like their happy-ish ending. Deanna was perfect. It's the same hairpiece that she used in Nemesis. So they're just absolutely...
And contact lenses.
And contact lenses. So everything just felt... Oh, it just felt so good to be back with them. And whereas Picard's voice, obviously people age and their voices change. Patrick Stewart's voice is very gravelly. It's obviously a lot older. The pair of them just sounded exactly as I remembered. So having this be the first new bit of the Next Generation content that I've seen as an adult was, huge. So this is easily my favorite episode to date so far. As well, I'm not saying anything about what happens in the future, but this was such a special episode. And you might criticize it for kind of putting the brakes on a bit, and we're kind of built to a crescendo. They're escaping the Borg. Soji's been activated. Sorry, damn it, Danae. No, it is Soji.
Okay, let's talk to the counselor about this. It's time. I'm pulling us into a counseling session. Albie? No, I'm calling it.
Go on.
Ian likes to blame me for his mistakes, and I don't know how to handle it. I'm talking. How would you advise that I move forward in this very interesting dynamic?
Okay, that is interesting. Definitely some transference going on there, I think. And maybe some vulnerability for me. Because he knows it is one of his faults. So it's his fault, basically, is what I'm saying.
Right.
So you shouldn't feel like threatened in any way by it.
Now I know how Picard feels.
Yeah, you'll hear it. You'll hear it. This won't probably make the cut because this is like inside information for the episode. But like last episode when we recorded it, Ian messed up like two times and said two or three things that were like completely wrong and blamed me every single time for
because
it. And here you're doing it again.
Although
just a big old fuck you, Ian.
For your merchandise, I do think that a t-shirt with what's her name again is probably
Which one is it?
What's it? Soji? Daj?
Was it Soji? Soji Dabuchi?
Saj?
Doji? Daj?
Doji?
Saj?
But yes.
So you were saying, Captain?
I was saying something about Soji. What was it?
Something really important. Clearly. That you blame me for, jerk.
Shut up. Get Go out ahead. My shit. Get off my bridge. Something Soji.
While you're thinking about that, can I point out something new that I saw in this episode that has made me just so happy?
Go for it.
When Jurati is visited by O. First off, like, what's with the sunglasses? She's a Vulcan. She's got two eyelids. She doesn't need them.
Oh, I totally missed
Romulans,
that. Yep.
But so that's a sin. We'll pick that up later. But when Jurati realizes she's there, she goes, "Oh!" And I just wanted a Monty Python sketch of them going, "Yes, oh, what's your name? Yes. Oh,
that's my name." Oh no, I didn't mean that.
So it's only because I was watching it with subtitles and it came up and I was like, Oh.
That's Commodore O to you, Doctor.
Oh, no.
Right. Long story short, I love this episode. It's great. It's amazing.
I do have some questions. I do have a couple questions that you guys probably be able to answer. So
go for it.
This story arc of their son, is this coming from other content where they had a son who it was an android?
Nope. All right, Albie, take this.
So we hadn't heard up to this point in this episode that they had kids. So this is the first. So we're finding out the same way that you are in terms of like this is the first instance of Thad being mentioned. Thad died of a rare disease when he was 15, this is where it gets a little bit sinful for me. He could have been saved if it was... basically, if there was synthetic life around, they could have developed a cure for him, but they couldn't. So he died.
Okay.
So
because I thought for a second that they were painting the picture that he was an android, and so his synth life was affected. But then she said, "So see, you know, even real, quote unquote, real people have problems too. Like we break down too."
Yeah.
And so then I thought, okay, so Thad was a betazoid humanoid mix.
So he was, but he was a real life kid. And the cure for his disease involved culturing something in a positronic matrix, which is the foundation of androids. That's their kind of like, what makes them sentient.
It's the MacGuffin. Yeah. The cure for his disease would have been found in any artificial android, but because of the ban, that meant that there's no cure.
But let's sin that further later, because I have further thoughts on that.
So the ban means that all of the androids were like taken away then?
Destroyed. Yeah, gone much as we know. Yeah.
So I don't think I actually understood that was part of what we were experiencing in the show, because it's not really been, to me, clearly defined yet. Like, what does that mean? Like, are they just that they're no longer, you know, being in production, or... I maybe missed some cues.
It's everything.
I don't think I realized
they can't be
that...
built. The research is limited. The knowledge of them is restricted, and any existing ones are
we're destroyed.
The airlock. Yeah.
It's like Star Trek's or the Federation's other big ban, which is like genetic engineering. So that's also banned, so
back to another thought that I had: if a betazoid and a human have children, would they be humazoids?
Well, Deanna is actually only half beta son. So technically.
Oh, interesting.
I'm guessing the kid would be like a quarter beta. Yeah, quarter beta.
Yeah, quarter beta zoid. Yeah, so
humicortizoid.
Yeah, nice humicortizoid. I like it.
Yeah, sounds like something medical.
We got humicortizoids running around.
And also before we shift, or just other things that I referenced, and I think that you were talking about wanting to see Riker in command, or like in command of a ship. I did like how his house was his ship.
Oh, that like was beautiful, wasn't it?
Yeah, shields how he kind of commanded it around.
Up.
Yeah. Like, I feel like if I was their child, it would be something I would likely roll my eyes at in some ways at some point in time. You know, like, come on, dad, you know.
Or, you're not on the ship anymore.
Yeah, yeah. But at the same time, it was really neat to see that the house looked like it was a Lincoln Log set.
Yep.
But it was actually like the super advanced, you
which
know,
it would need
thing.
To be. He's made some enemies. He'd want it to be protected, yeah. definitely. But it was good to get a Riker bellow.
I love that, though, as well, the house, because like Riker's from Alaska and he was always like a big wilderness guy. So it makes perfect sense for them as a character as well.
Perfect. Like,
oh, that's neat. Yeah. I had forgotten that. There's so much I don't remember about the content and the world. And I think even though there was a reference that this one made kind of towards the end when Riker and Picard were sitting, I wrote it down. Hold on a second. Oh, okay. So Riker and Picard are talking about the existing crew, and Picard says that the crew that he currently is looking at, that's coming to him, quote unquote, like have more baggage than they ever did. Like that the original TNG crew ever did.
Yep.
And I thought this was a really interesting kind of wink and nod to how storytelling has shifted in shows.
Absolutely.
Because even though I love Deanna and Riker and Picard and Data and Geordi and all these characters and Beverly and all of this, I don't know anything about them. I just know them visually, and I know what role they played in the episode. Mm-hmm. And that's all that I need to know. Where I feel like now storytelling is like giving reason to decisions. And I feel like that's kind of a new shift of even understanding the reason a villain does what a villain does, because maybe we fell into these story tropes where, you know, the good guys are always justified in killing the bad guys, but then
being
we forgot that the bad
enough.
Guys, yeah, like we forgot the bad guys also have reason too, and maybe there's sides to every story. So storytelling has shifted, rightfully so. And so now we have these shows where they're really giving like gravity to the characters, so much so that in this one we're learning like that their parents, that they have children that have died.
Yeah.
They gave character to an entire room. Like when Deanna reaches for the doorknob and kind of just barely pauses for a second, and just the emotion she shows in her face before opening it, I instantly am like, Thad's dead.
Yeah.
Right? Mm-hmm. Maybe could have been winked and nod a little bit beforehand, but now it's like, oh, this is not an easy room to go into. So there's so much depth. And then the room is filled with things that give even more history to characters that we're apparently never even going to see, like Kestra and all the drawings and all the stuff. Like they're doing so much story building. And so I just felt like it was a fun little nod to the development of backstory for characters and shows now. Like maybe we didn't think that we needed to have this before. We had so much less to relate to. Now we have so much they're giving us to relate to, sometimes too much to relate to, that we can't imprint our own people. This is one reason I wonder if I love Deanna so much. I got to imprint my Deanna onto that character. They didn't define it for me. So it's just an interesting kind of thought process I went to while watching this episode.
Yeah, it's true. And that line she says, I'm not brave as I used to be, Jean-Luc, like my heart broke 10 times over, but also it's so relatable, as you know, when I think about when I watched Trek when I was younger versus now and the type of person I am and what I've been through. It's you're so right. It's just so relatable and gives depth, but doesn't overdo it. Like we get more of a backstory for Thad than we probably ever did in seasons of Trek for Deanna and Riker. So
that's why you're forgiven for not knowing that Riker's from Alaska. It gets mentioned in two episodes, and that's, I think it is literally two episodes, and that's it.
Yeah.
Riker and Deanna's romance is set up as a conflict thing in the pilot, and then touched upon a few times, but it was never the the ongoing arc that I think somebody once upon a time anticipated. But it's that shift from serialized storytelling away from Adventure of the Week and Alien of the Week.
Or Shag of the Week, if you're Riker.
Yeah, if you're Riker, oh my goodness. Yeah, he definitely got some space herpes.
Actually, that's one funny moment for me, and this is when he says to Picard, I told you you'd be, I think he says, ass deep in Romulans, and I couldn't listen to that without visualizing something sexual because it's Riker, and it's so wrong.
But yet so right.
Yeah,
at the
you
same
absolutely
time.
Know he's been ass deep in a lot of Romulans.
I know we usually go like scene by scene through this, so I don't know if we're jumping around too much. But
that's
there was
fine.
Like, I also had another thing that was really interesting in this episode too, and that was so like seeing Picard and Riker together in this episode. There was a couple of moments when I was like, oh, I don't like that. The one that really bugged me was when they're at the table. And, you know, Will is, he's about to kind of like go to Picard's defense, and Picard like holds his hand up to stop him. And I was just like, hello, ego again. Like, really? Let the man speak. You know, he's in his own home. This isn't your fucking ship, Picard. You're in Riker's goddamn house, which he treats as a ship, by the way. You know,
of course
it's
he
so
does.
Frustrating to me. I was like, he just dismisses him. And I want to hear what he has to say. Like, I wanted to hear that moment when, like, we hear Riker go to Picard's defense because, but I know that they're building that. I know they're trying to build the Soji coming to that, too. Like, she wants to come into it her own. And I realize that they're building character, but that really pissed me off. I was like, what?
It's probably because he's pissed off from Deanna telling him off earlier and Will telling him off. Because Deanna tells him, you had it coming, right? And then,
do that moment.
And then Will also says, you know, typical Jean-Luc Picard, you know, making the decisions.
You get to choose.
Yeah, which I actually quite
that
like.
That was
it's
interesting.
Like,
I did too.
Yeah, it was a good moment. And it was still done with love and done in a way that's, you know, you'd call out a friend for saying, you know what? You're being a bit of a dick there. But yeah.
Yeah, but like their rank had been taken off. Like they're not wearing their uniforms anymore. Yeah. So. Yeah. They can kind of put that aside, and enough time has happened between them that Will can say something like that to Picard.
Yeah.
And oh, for sure.
Honestly, if there's a character that could talk to Picard like that, it's going to be the crew.
Yeah.
Like, that's the characters I want to see talk to Picard that way. I don't want to see the interview in episode one. I don't want to see that shit.
Some like, stranger telling him that he's a dick.
Yeah. If it's coming from Will and Deanna, I'm like, you're being a dick, Picard. But if it's coming from other people, I'm like, you shut your mouth.
That's so my captain.
Isn't that weird? That's weird.
You're absolutely right, because it comes from a place that you trust. Like, they've got 30 years of friendship, and we've now missed half of that friendship because it happened between series. But I love that Deanna got some teeth. Like, Picard, for some reason, has a senior moment and decides to sarcastically put down Soji. And it's all fake. You don't have to trust me. Stop being a brat. Stop being a child. And gets in her way, which was, And Deanna is just like seething and rips him apart. And it's by far and away like Deanna was good at calling people out, but this is the most kind of passionately
direct.
She's ever done it. Yeah, the most direct. It was so good to see.
Yeah, Picard in this one does several things again, where he'll say something or do something that just seems incredibly peculiar to me, even how he introduces Soji to Kestra.
Oh my goodness.
They're walking along the road.
Yeah.
And Kestra's like, so who is your dad? And Picard just sort of casually bomb drops that it's Data and is like, oh yeah, she's an android. Knowing that Soji is incredibly just frazzled already.
Yeah.
She's not stable emotionally. She could freak out.
Yeah.
You know?
Murder everyone.
Just, so he does that.
And hey, if that's not good enough, how about you tell her that her sister is dead as well?
All in front of a child.
Yeah.
By the way, you know? So there's just, and this is where I get a little frustrated with the writers, more than I'm getting frustrated with Picard, because he goes back and forth at other places too. It's not just Picard's writing in this one. Even Riker, towards the end, he's like, nobody would blame you if you stayed home and let other people save the galaxy, except that's what the entire series is about.
Yeah.
Is that people are frustrated that Picard has stayed home and let other people take care of the galaxy. So that's frustrating. And then
what have you been doing, Will?
turns around. Yeah, then he turns around, like takes a breath, you know, puts his arm around Picard, smiles his beautiful smile. God, he's so cute. And then he says, and then Picard's like, thanks for not trying to talk me out of this. When Riker just said, nobody would blame you if you stayed home. So I was like, wait, what are the writers doing? I feel like whiplash. This hurts. Anyway, there's a couple moments in the writing that I was like just confused about. And it's sort of like they're just sort of getting these. That's maybe more for the sin side of everything. But it still felt really good to see come out of these characters that I love. Oddly, I was still super into it.
I think they've got their bingo card moments that they need to tick off. And it's the conflict resolution stuff. But overall, yeah. I overall
liked it too.
There was a moment, there was another Picard thing that slightly irritated me. And if there's one broad criticism I have of Star Trek Picard season one. So he starts referring to Soji as a girl. And like we've seen her as a highly accomplished doctor up to this point. But suddenly suddenly he's kind of infantilizing her as a result then so is Deanna and Will. Which I know kind of makes sense because there's the whole, oh, I'm 3 years old type thing. But that didn't sit right with me because Picard was, you know, he's always been a character of integrity and will always respect people where they're at and stuff. So that felt a little bit odd. And I think my general observation is female characters are over traumatized in this show. So I think every major female character has a scene where she's crying. You know, there's an element of that. And I was kind of thinking that through again while watching this. And it's not that they're not well-written characters or well-rounded characters, but you can tell there's a lot of male writers behind the show is the one thing I would say.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. There's a lot of strong females. Like even in this episode, we have Agnes who is tortured, you know, she tortures herself. Her soul is tortured. She's vomiting. She's she's falling apart and it's really well acted, but it's very intense.
She's great.
Then you have Rafi, who is sort of bouncing into a mother type character, taking care of Agnes, but still tortured in her own way and self-medicating. So you've got this interesting kind of dynamic. We see strong female lead. We've got the Romulan sister.
Nerissa, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Who takes front and center on this one. So there's a lot of really strong female, and I love seeing it.
Yeah.
I love seeing it. I'm all for it. There does seem to be the trauma is real.
Yeah.
Which, although, you know, it's nice to see Kestra, I guess, as like you said, Albie, that childlike perspective who has seen, you know, hard things and is trying to work it through too, but still has that childlike approach. Yeah.
Mm.
That is really nice. And it's the viewer's eye as well. A really good merge of a character there. That is an interesting observation for sure.
Using her as a gateway for Soji back to her humanity that she just lost like a day ago or hours ago is really, really, really clever because she's questioning the fabric of reality. Like this could be a holodeck for all she knows. Like she can't trust her memories at all.
God, can you imagine?
Oh, it's really messed up. And the way that I'm glad they didn't gloss over it because it's more fucked up than I even realized to go from having 28, 29 years of history down to 3 years and not even know what those 3 years are and then be taken to a planet and then everyone's being nice to you and feeding you. You're like, where the fuck am I and what's going on? Like, that's so, so fucked up.
Also, Picard had the same thing happen to him in The Inner Light.
Yes. No, he absolutely did.
So
yeah,
you'd imagine, if anything, Will had it happen to him as well when he was kidnapped by the Romulans and put in a holodeck. Like, they've all been through it. Troy, when she was kidnapped by the Romulans and put in prosthetics. I mean, they've all done it, right?
they've all had identity crises.
Yeah, exactly.
But one episode memory.
Wouldn't that be an interesting thing to have also potentially have had time to touch on is the writers digging back into the history of these characters and their understanding of where Soji is. And almost even sharing some of their trauma, potentially all arriving at like this moment where like, we're happy here, even if this is fake. Like,
yes.
You know?
That's something we all need to get comfortable with because this could be a simulation. So
we could be in one
right
now. As
long as you're
happy,
don't question if it's a holiday. Computer, end program. Nope, it's still real.
Nope. Okay, we're still here. That's a really interesting observation too. And I love that you guys know those things, like you have those reference points, because it does give a different depth, like that ready room moment around the table when they're having non-simulated pizza or whatever. Replicated pizza. Yeah. That they're having this kind of, like, Troy is probably thinking about those exact memories that you just mentioned. That's mm-hmm. that's what they would be thinking about is, yeah, it sucks. Mm-hmm. But we have all this experience, like, you're going to get through it. And being able to remind Picard to just be careful in how he talks to her and guide her through it. And then for Kestra to tell Soji, you have to trust someone too. Like, I got through this because of my parents, because I have support. You're going to need that too. So it kind of felt like what this episode did was it took the characters on the planet. What's the planet's name?
Nepenthe.
Yeah, it took like the Nepenthe story. And it's kind of like, okay, we're all going to be healing together. And then on the opposite side, you have like a shitstorm happening where Elnor is curling up in the corner of a Borg cube about to cry.
Backwards and forwards. Yeah. Well, let's transition into that.
Yeah. What was that thing?
So that was the emergency beacon that Seven of Nine gave to Picard somehow Elnor now has, but... That's fine. It's okay. Whatever.
Was it hanging off of a console? Because it seemed like he just saw it.
Well, he had...
That was confusing to me.
Yeah, that was confusing. Okay. But either way, yeah, that's what it is. So bring on the Rangers. Nerissa has now exposed herself completely. Like, she's always been in the shadows. She's always been like a hologram or sneaking around, checking in with Narek. But now she's exposed herself and is
Don't say it like that. It's uncomfortable.
What? She has. Exposed her position. And has decided to get very, very murdery. How did you feel, Albie, about Hugh's exit? How did you feel when Hugh turned up again a few episodes before this and then his sudden exit?
Yeah, I mean, I was delighted to see Hugh again. Obviously, we knew because... they had to reveal every guest star that was going to be in the show beforehand.
In every trailer.
So we knew he was going to turn up. But it was amazing to see like him fully realized as a character in his own right, separate from the Borg.
Having Talking a about purpose. More backstory.
Yeah. It felt like a throwaway death to me. I'm not sure what it adds to the story.
Yeah, agreed. I personally don't get it.
The only thing I can think of is it moves Elnor from being the... helper of the lost cause to actually being the lost cause himself, if that makes sense.
That's about it. Interesting.
But my goodness, if you're going to kill off a character with a legacy like Hugh, don't make it for that. it felt like we know he's not going to be in season 2 and 3. Likely, we will never need him again, so let's kill him. And hey, if we need to, the ship reassimilates him and we'll bring him back to life somehow. It didn't have the punch that I needed it to.
No, and also to do it with Elnor, who is a character who has like zero connection to him. If Picard was around, if someone else or Seven or someone who had some element of a connection.
Is it just to make us hate Nerissa more? Because I already don't like her.
I mean, give the woman a moustache because she is that kind of villain, right?
Oh, she's that,
She's literally the twirling villain,
No, it's interesting, too, because we also don't have a really deep emotional connection to Elnor because he's not relatable, really, and he hasn't had a lot of screen time, right?
He's been underused. Just... They pick him up and then forget about him.
So to take, like, a Hugh, which people are like, oh, cool, and then put him with, like, a kid who stuck around, by the way, to protect and then disappeared so that all the Borg could be... the XPs Moided. Could be killed, and then he shows up right after that moment. I was so... That's one of my resistance is futile moments for sure. The whole thing just was like it felt forced. It felt strange. Like we're gonna kill off Hugh, and here's just how it's gonna happen in this very strange.
Like if you're gonna commit to doing it, have him sacrifice himself. It's just a throwaway dagger.
Oh my god! For a split second there, I was like, oh my god. Hugh and Elnor are about to take over the Borg cube. Yes! This is gonna fucking rule.
I thought they were. When I first watched it, I was like, "Ooh, they're gonna become a couple." That's where I went with it.
Oh, that's that awesome! Would have been so cool.
But that didn't happen. No. But the one thing I thought was like, because you have that scene where Nerissa's like just being total heinous villain going. All their debts are on you and the debts of everyone in the galaxy because you let Picard and Soji go. Technically, she fucked up, so it's on her. But anyway, like if she killed him after that, that would have been even like more devastating and therefore probably more impactful because it's like you kill him with that parting thought. But no, she just kind of walks away and does the whole, oh, you're a Federation citizen. I'm just going to leave you do your thing.
And then decides to kill him anyway.
It's just a casual stabby stabby. I wonder if they made it a less impactful death because of all of the lovey stuff that we've got going on. So all of the, they didn't want to tinge the episode with Deanna and Riker with also killing off Hugh. So do it in a different episode is what I'm saying. Like do it in the finale. Like you couldn't have brought him back for one more episode. Like, I mean, why kill him now at all?
I mean, they also killed Icheb, so they've basically killed two ex-Borg.
Yeah.
So, you know,
and just, the
there's so much.
All
the stuff, there's so much.
Yeah, all the stuff they set up around, like, you know, the XBs coming back into the world and giving them a second chance of life, and let's just kill the two figureheads that we know.
Which, based on, so last episode we kind of talked about, you know, even just that storyline and how interesting that is. So maybe they realized that they were opening up this really interesting world and they weren't prepared for it. It's like, you know what? This kill is it. Too much. We've made too much. We've given this too much. Let's just kill it. But you're right. Like maybe he's brought back somehow. Maybe there's something that happens that they can do with the story somehow. But it just seemed like, why wouldn't the sister just jump on a ship with her brother and go after Soji? Why? Yeah. I don't know.
Because she was going to go to the home planet? Was that the
idea? That's right. That's right.
Yeah, she's trying to get that out of him, but can't because he doesn't know. Which he doesn't, but blah.
Yeah.
It's the only bit of the episode that feels tacked on, for sure.
Well, if she wants to know where the home planet is, she just has to go hack some kid's text message to a captain. About a security breach. I like how the parents were just like at the table. This could be in this instance, but how the parents at the table and they're like really proud of Kestra. They're like, oh, good job, Kestra, for figuring that out. And I'm like, security breach? This is really highly classified information.
But you know what? That felt like a really relatable moment because, you know, I've been at the kitchen table when you're debating something like that. And what if like my nieces or nephews have Googled it and found it out in the second? So that felt like, oh, yeah. Yeah,
that was very authentic.
Right.
You're right.
Annoyingly accurate.
Yeah.
But yeah, massive Starfleet security. Starfleet has the worst security system on ever at all for every episode. So that leaves us with the La Serena and Rios frustratingly not being able to shake his Romulan pointed eared tail. And this is where like Agnes just gets unhinged. Like, she gets, like, Raffi nails it. She's like, yeah, when you came on the ship, you were nervous, you were giggly, you were funny, and now you're militant. Like, you are really pissy in what's going on. Obviously, Rios figures out that something is squiffy here. Somehow they're being tracked. And I love that he immediately goes to Raffi. He, like, points the finger at her hard.
What? She is the easier target.
Yeah.
What would you have thought if they actually didn't do that setup with Agnes and we didn't know as the viewer? Do you think that would have been a more interesting way to play it? So it could be Raffi or it could
It would have been for the short term, but for the long term, it gives you another twist, another reveal. And I think
fair enough.
Doing it this way makes it more rewatchable. I think if you do it that way, it's a bigger twist and turn.
You guys know more about if they have more twists and turns in the future to reveal. But I think it would have been really interesting because we would have watched Agnes essentially kill herself wondering why or try to.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know if she was actually intending to kill herself because I wasn't really sure exactly what she replicated.
Well,
was it a pass out innator or was it an offinator?
No, it's something that she knows will disrupt the signal of the thing that she ate, of the tracking.
Okay, so she's
diamond.
Not actually trying to just check out forever.
But that was a possible outcome.
It was. Okay.
Yeah, she knew that was a risk. It would have been a great reveal. It would have been a great twist, but you only get that twist once. And I wouldn't trade that for being alongside her as she's had more information than anybody else.
Yeah,
that makes sense.
And thinking about it, we know what she did with Bruce Maddox as well. So, yeah.
Mm-hmm. You'd have had to hide that as well. You've then got a load of backpedaling to do with, a Columbo moment at the end, where it's like, I know that you killed this person with the hypo spray in the med bay. So, yeah, I get the temptation, but I think they went the right way with it.
Cool.
But I think maybe we could have not seen the cake scene.
Save it for engineering.
But I guess
my favorite line in this section is from Raffi, who's come to Agnes's aid, and there was a little bit of, who are you to be helping her? You're completely messed up. And she just kind of put me in my place and was like, yeah, sometimes a fucked up person can pull themselves together enough to make a semi-helpful person that can help in an emergency. And that's so true. Like, she may go into a spiral after this, but in an emergency, she's still a mum. She still has that maternal instinct. So it was a great episode to see another side of Raffi.
100% agree.
Yeah, I think that they're doing a good job of sprinkling in just enough details of her character that we remember that she is redeemable, which is a really important thing for people to do when they're justifying character arcs later on.
Yep. I think that's... Unless there's anything else you want to hit on from the episode?
It feels like we got through quite a few drinks talking that over.
My final thing was that Nepenthe, because you were questioning the name of it earlier. It's a Greek drug, apparently, or it's in Greek mythology, and it would be a drug that would help you specifically forget traumatic pain.
Interesting.
It's a cool name. So they
That's so interesting.
And the planet has regenerative properties, according to Riker. Indeed. So,
yeah,
little bit of foreshadowing maybe there, but you know, unless you're in the know.
Whoa, that's a real. And I picked up on what he said about the planet, but I didn't understand like the name, the history of the name. That's so interesting. I know we talked about it already. I'm not gonna spend a lot of time on it, guys. I was so happy to see Troy. I was so happy to see Riker.
That was a fist pump.
Yeah, you guys, you heard me react whenever they... I just heard his voice and I knew it was Will. I was like...
That wasn't actually
the noise that I made. I think it was more like...
You swooned. I saw a visible swoon when Riker appeared, as did we all.
Yeah, but when Troy sees Picard and they embrace for the first time and you just see all this like emotion in her eyes and then she realizes that he's there and he's dying... And they don't even say it. They don't even say it. It's just like this unknown between them. And how he's like, it's okay. It's okay. Like when Picard dies, when Sir Patrick passes, that's the thing that I'm going to remember is him like looking to camera, basically saying, it's okay. It's okay. You know, because like we love this guy.
It's an emotional episode.
Okay, let's move on.
Quick. Take us to engineering.
Warning. Warp core collapse in 10 seconds.
This is the part of the show where we re-engage our sin brains, remind ourselves that no TV show is without sin, even our beloved Star Trek. Albie, you are the guest, so you may go first. What was your first sin to get off your chest?
Right, let's go.
Just do it.
The goddamn pizzas and everything to do with the pizzas.
What's wrong with the pizza?
Well, first off, they were cooking that fucking pizza all day long in daylight and then they sat down to dinner at nighttime and then everyone only took one bloody slice. Like, who eats one slice of pizza? And also...
That is Star Trek.
And also, there was, like, dead bunny on it. Like, really? And Kestra said she was a pacifist yet murdered some rabbits.
So okay. Good. Oh, what a great juicy sin that is. That sin lasts all day long. That has dimension. That has like magnitude. You're not wrong.
It has rage as pizza. Well. As a vegetarian, it has rage.
Yes. My rage was just at the bunny corn. I was like, you got a fucking rabbit and stuck a pine cone on its head. Yeah. Like, that's your alien species,
although,
really.
That was an actual in-joke. So that was a tribute to the dog with the horn in the original series.
Oh, was it actually?
Yeah,
it was
actually a premeditated thing.
Okay, that's fine. I'll let them have it. No, that's fair. She shouldn't be killing things. She's a pacifist and it took all day to make food that they then didn't eat.
I have more. Shall I keep going?
Oh, we're gonna do a round robin.
Okay,
Danae, go for it.
Oh, okay. I know that it's important, but every episode starts with going back in time.
Oh,
either
agreed.
13 years or 3 weeks or at some point. And it is a little bit of a jumble in my mind.
It's such a momentum killer, isn't it?
Yeah, because it immediately says, oh, okay, wait, where are we? What happened last episode? What happened this whole series so far? Because now we're, you know, this many episodes in. And mm-hmm. so there's a little chart in my mind that I'm trying to keep track of as to where we are.
Yeah.
And it is helpful sometimes to see what happened in the past. But because they do this almost every episode or every episode where we go back an X amount of years mm-hmm. or further or whatever, I know that they're piecing something together. But you don't have to do that every episode. And it just kind of bugged me to see it again.
It's an important bit of exposition, but it's in the wrong place. It's not how the episode needed to start.
So when Agnes, the going back 3 weeks in this is to replay the scene between Agnes and Commander?
Commodore.
A Commodore. Oh. And so, but when Agnes is, when Rios,
nailed it!
I remembered his
name. As long as you mean the captain of the ship.
Yeah! sorry. When Rios is questioning or telling Agnes that he thinks that Rafi is the one to be suspicious of,
mm-hmm.
that would be an interesting moment to kind of flash back to that conversation.
Perfect.
Like she's remembering it and remembering taking this interesting like synth pill or tracking device or whatever.
That way would have more been organic.
A really interesting way to do that. And then you cut out the first, you know, 10 minutes that we don't need to actually replay. But we do also see the memories implanted. But when she's having her mental breaks, she could be flashing back again to that moment where she's being shown something she didn't want to see. That was an interesting reveal to know how it was shown to her, this future that she didn't want to see or this memory or whatever she was shown. So, but that was a little bit, I'm like, God, can we please just start the show?
Yeah. We've already had previous Leons. We now have more exposition. I want to know what's happening right now. Yeah, totally.
Agree. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. My first one's really simple. Punching a holographic display. when Rios gets really frustrated that he can't, they're in the tractor beam, and he just punches the holographic display. I was like, well, A, you found some resistance, and B, like, why? I loved that. I loved and hated it. Albie, what have you got?
So there's actually two continuity errors in this episode that really bug me.
Oh.
So the first one is Commander O again. Her rank pin is crooked in the first shot and isn't in the second.
Nice.
So that annoys me.
Love that.
And the second one is that there's a shot of Hugh peering around the corner as Nerissa and Elnor fight. And he already has the knife in his neck.
Oh, no. No,
what?
He doesn't.
He does.
See,
go
can
look
I
at
bounce
it.
Off
go
of,
look at it.
Can I bounce off of your sin here for that scene just as a reminder? Because that scene bugged the shit out of me. There were so many beaming spotlights spinning around. Like, what do we need on this Borg ship that just constantly has lights just spinning around? Because this is how the Borg ship is. Even when Picard and Hugh met and like met on that kind of like walkway and hugged each other in that moment, there's just this beam of light spinning around like a disco. And then in the fight scene with Elnor, he's doing all this parkour, like jumping off of all of these boxes and cubes and stuff, which could look cool if the camera would slow down a little bit. It's just spinning around and there's all these lights everywhere. Like, I could not look at one thing that entire scene. So congratulations to you for finding that, because that scene was so busy for me that the sin was just like,
I did not spot it until this time round. The one
I'm
in the neck.
Looking at it now, it's insane.
It's so
it's
obvious.
Unreal. It's just sticking out of
sin.
His neck.
Yeah.
What a great sin.
Oh my gosh, that's crazy. He just looks around the corner and it's just like, nothing to see here. Great. but no, that was my next sin as well, was that the choreography, the fighting, it's the worst that we see in the entire season. And so far, it's been great. The action has been fantastic. But this was just so hard to see what was going on. And it makes me think that maybe the actor that plays Nerissa doesn't have the same stunt credentials or couldn't quite pull it off the same that the actor that Elnor plays, the actor that plays Elnor does. Because that's usually the reason you do quick cuts, is because you don't want to show who's doing what and you don't want to show the action. But yeah, it was that entire fight sequence was a mess. What was my next one? Hugh being protected by a treaty until he isn't. And just like, if a treaty is going to hold you back, it's going to take more than whatever you say that he's attempting to do to go against it. And if it's that easy, just make up a fucking reason and kill him on the spot. Like, just make some, it's not like Starfleet around the corner and checking in on you. Like, yeah. It was such a flimsy reason to not kill him. And that treaty apparently doesn't protect the XBs. We're just going to murder all of them. That's fine.
Yeah, and also, like, you know, let's go infiltrate Starfleet to its highest ranks, but let's not kill someone because of a treaty.
Yeah, but let's diplomatic immunity.
Yeah, that was crazy.
Blow the tits off me. Albie, man, I don't know if you're allowed to have another go, because that one
is good.
It's so brutal. Good, but go ahead. I'm going to send a picture of this to Danae.
Followed by a knife in the neck? I'm so excited for what you're going to say next.
This is building on one of the sins you called out from episode one, which is around the transporter tech.
Mm-hmm.
Picard and Soji happen to land on Nepenthe in exactly the right place at the right moment to meet Kestra.
Yeah, huh?
Insane.
I mean, it's been a while since I watched the episode before, but I'm pretty sure Picard didn't go, I need to go exactly here. And
no. He just says Nepenthe and probably gives some coordinates. I mean, why that far away from the house? Like, just beam into their back garden.
Yeah.
I guess maybe if he thought ahead for protecting them so that the coordinates weren't exact, but even if someone went to Nepenthe and asked around, they would find out that Riker and Troy were there and put two and two together.
And the answer is to get the expositional walk from A to B, but
And the curious, like, oh, are we on like a, you know, primitive native style home world where, you know, people are using bows and arrows.
I love that shadowy shot where she's kind of got antenna and bow and arrow. And that's exactly what the intent is.
It was it's so D&D-esque, wasn't it?
It's so
like,
good.
You know, like playing dress up and stuff.
Yeah.
Pretty
roll
cute.
Initiative. Yeah. There's a little girl.
Yeah.
I got plenty more.
Yeah,
good. We're not done.
Yeah, you go for it.
So in sickbay on La Serena, the replicator that they used to create the hypospray is actually a 3D printer, and you can see the brand name on it.
Oh no! Oh no! That makes no sense. Why would you use an actual 3D printer?
It's also the 3D printer that we see in Utopia Planitia when the workers like replicate some lunch for themselves. It's the same.
Oh, that's hilarious.
Do you think it's like a brand deal? Where
I don't think so. I think they just were like, oh, we'll just use this and someone forgot to cover up the brand.
This looks sci-fi enough. We'll use this.
Yeah. But you get enough of a lingering shot on this that you can actually see it.
That's
my
hilarious.
Sin in that moment when she... So this is when she replicates that thing that puts her into a coma, yeah?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So she goes up to like the little display and she just pushes a few buttons. And I'm like, don't you usually speak to the replicator and tell it what you need? Because she presses like three components on it and it develops what she needs. And then the computer says, just a warning, this could be dangerous, so that we, the audience, have this sort of buildup. But does that mean that in just a few presses of the button, anybody could replicate that? Like, it just seemed like it was really strange that it was like a button push situation.
Yeah. I mean, Jurati is a doctor, so she's actually a medical doctor as well as a cyberneticist.
Right.
So maybe she knows a shortcut or something, but it's pretty sinful.
What
I think.
A shortcut to have.
Yeah. Also, wouldn't there be, rather than going, warning, the thing you just replicated might kill you, you kind of go, warning, we will not replicate this until you can verify.
Yeah, or
right.
Only the captain can do this, or at least like a little memo is sent to the captain. By the way, somebody died in here, and the only other person in the room is now trying to replicate something really sketchy. the sick bay knows exactly what's going on, but doesn't tell anybody. Yeah,
I
want to
bounce
sinful.
Off of that too, like with the whole ship thing. Can I ask this question? You guys might want this question. Is it a sin or is it not a sin that Randy Rowdy
Rios.
Captain Rios
yep.
suddenly he's like, Rafi, do this. kill the tractor beam. What are you doing? Push the buttons, blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, don't you have computer systems that could come to your fucking aid, dude? Like, can't you just say, like, hey, person, appear and do shit? Because isn't that part of the whole thing? Like, he has a crew at the ready?
Yeah, there's a hologram that looks after the weapons, engineering, hospitality, but apparently not one for whatever drunk Raffi is doing. Inebriated
so
Raffi is better than any computer program, apparently.
He's just yelling at her. Like, yeah. What if she wasn't here? Would you be doing that? Would a computer be doing that? So what? Maybe engage that part. I don't know. It just seemed like it was an unnecessary tension builder when the answer is use the computer like you usually do.
So the novel that Ian is about to embark on reading actually answers that.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, because where I've started the novel, he doesn't have that hologram stuff set up yet.
So is it too spoilery to tell tell us?
It's a great story. I'm not going to ruin it. I'm not going to ruin it for Ian because it is actually
excited for it.
So can I sin it or no?
Sin it.
I think you can sin it based on what you see on screen. And it is extended canon. So,
Guess would be that he has a crew to go into dangerous situations. So the ship is enough to help him out getting from A to B. But when he has a mission, he needs a crew in different positions. But I will see in feedback. I think my biggest sin for the entire episode would undo the episode. And I know it has to happen, but Picard should not have gone to Nepenthe. He absolutely should not have gone to Will and Deanna. And I know he says, I regret it already, I've put you in danger, but you knew that going in. As far as impulses go, this is really super duper selfish. And with the trauma they've already been through, they have a little girl that, as far as he knows, he's bringing a Borg cube filled with Romulans with him to them. And man, I would never forgive him for doing this. Like, go to Worf, go to I know we don't know where they are, but you must have a contact that isn't in his 60s that can help you out here.
I actually agree with you, as much as it pains me because I want to see them there.
Yeah, and I wouldn't change it.
Why did he go? What did he gain by going there? Peace of mind?
I don't know what he gained. He did, because Rios just picks him back up again. He just gets beamed up. It got him out, but they didn't actually help him other than some emotional counseling for Soji that he didn't realize he needed.
He could have just he could have just gone to La Serena.
Not far enough away, I would imagine, because the tractor beam only lets La Serena go because they know that Soji isn't on the ship.
Right.
But I'm just anywhere. Like, I don't
know. Just the next planet over or something. Yeah.
Whatever planet you want. I don't know.
This is dangerous. So in the moment, maybe he panicked and he couldn't think of any place else because he was, pressed for time and aging, perhaps. Mm-hmm. Again, I'm going to blame everything on age.
Yeah.
But you're absolutely right. What a horrible thing to press onto these beautiful people that should just be left alone to their healing.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I wasn't going to mention this one, but it's super quick. It's the fact that, because you said Hugh has the knife that's stabbing in his neck. Ironically, when he is stabbed, that cut disappears. So when she's holding the blade up to his neck originally and the blood starts going down the knife, in the next shot, there's no cut. The one time they need it and it's not there.
The whole scene is just so... it's so confusing. Like even the Romulan lady herself, she says to him, like, that's not how the Zotfash fight.
Malot fight, yeah.
Right? But she had just shot at them.
Oh, my note for that is Elnor, fucking stab her.
Yeah.
Like, screw it. Just stab her with a samurai stick.
She had already been shooting at them.
Yeah.
So this is clearly just her attempt to be like, we have an honor system.
It would have been a this works sin for forever. I don't know, Elnor is a bit naive, fine, but
He also just instinctively chops people's heads off. Like, he just ended the last episode slicing people's heads off without question. So suddenly he just turns into this different, I don't know, that was, the whole part was just so frustrating.
Yeah, that bugged me.
Mm-hmm.
Anything else, guys?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, go for it.
You want me to do it? Okay.
Hit me.
In CinemaSins world, we send candles.
Yep, a lot of candling.
Table. with all of the candles was very, one wasn't even lit on certain shots. There were so many and I just don't know why. So I would, that's just an easy, like an easy reach for one. There's another moment with Elnor where he, like one of the last two shots of Elnor when he, so the last shot of Elnor, he's like kind of huddled in the corner, but just before the corner, he dives under a table to get to the corner, like in this sort of like dramatic fashion when he could have just walked around. And I'm just like, I guess that's just fun for Elnor. Just
apparently it is. Give him something,
you know,
to do.
When you want to go across the room, you don't just walk.
No. Nope.
You dive under tables and roll around parkour-like.
Yep. Which
I guess if I was really athletic, maybe I would do too. I don't know.
In crunch time.
So that was one. Do you have more too, Albie? Because I have
just,
more
I just have one more. How do house shields work? Can you walk through them? Can you? Because they were out in the garden afterwards. So is it a shield around the boundary? Because you see like a flash on the windows, which implies that there's a shield.
Right. How do you get through? Do they scan your body bio and they know who can go in and out?
Shield technology has always been dodgy in Star Trek. Like, it's always changeable whether or not you can beam through them as well when it's convenient. No, that's a fair sin, definitely. What have you got to wrap us up, Danae?
I think I would definitely sin. This is staying in the where Deanna and Will are. If they're outdoor-y people, why is Deanna in like 4-inch heels? This bothers me so much.
In every show.
You know, if it's her aesthetic, all for it. You can wear heels wherever you want to go. At least they were kind of chunky heels so they don't just dig into the earth all the time. But like if you're going to go gardening and you're living out in the wilderness, you would think that you would have on clothes that would be easy to just get around in. And she's just like looking so cute, but also why? So I usually like to sin heels when I can.
Probably because she's 5'4" and Will's 6'3".
That's what I was about to say. As two people that have stood next to Marina Sirtis, she is 5'3" on a good day.
Yeah. That's so like, cute, though. Let her be 5'3". No, but
if she's into outdoorsiness, she can't reach shit. So she needs heels to get to like the apples
to get to
and
the
stuff.
Tomatoes.
Get to the tomatoes. She's tall. She's
or
shorter
tomatoes,
than most of the vines.
As she said, which was sinful to me. Just because,
as an English person, indeed. Yeah.
Oh, speaking of being an English person, I liked the line. Oh, what was the line? It was when the hologram shows up at the end when Agnes falls over. What was it?
Oh, bloody hell!
Oh, bloody hell!
It's so good. Please state the nature of the medical. Oh, bloody hell.
So I liked that a lot.
That's up there with the cheeky feckers line from Laris earlier in the show.
The Momulan. Yeah. Oh, it's so good. I love it. Oh, bloody hell.
Oh, bloody
the,
hell.
The poor accents are also explained in the book, which I was quite happy
with. Yeah,
it's nice.
I've got one final one, but I don't know if it's a sin as such, but it bothers me.
Bring it to the table.
Oh, actually mind rapes Jurati. She doesn't ask for consent.
Yeah, this non-consensual mind meld.
Too.
Yeah, absolutely.
It was really disturbing to watch. I mean, it speaks to her, like, her dark nature.
Oh,
you
for
know?
Sure. Yeah, like, no self-respecting whatever she is, Vulcan / Romulan, whatever, would do something like that. But we know she's evil, so it doesn't matter. So it's
that
still,
really solidifies it, though, doesn't it? Mm-hmm. You know?
Like, you rarely do it with anybody that isn't in your family, let alone,
I absolutely had that, too.
It's like, let me show you. It's the equivalent of just like getting your junk out in front of someone's face. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
it's like that. So that really popped. And I hadn't realized that until I watched it this time. But yeah. That's...
Mm-hmm. Yeah, she didn't have a choice. I think it's important for us to see that part of Agnes's backstory because we need to understand how she arrived in her unraveling that she's in, that she has happening, you know, right now. And when she said, I wish I wouldn't have been shown what I was shown. Now we see how traumatic it was. It wasn't like, she sat down for a debrief and they all talked about it or something. It was forced on her, which, you know, lets us again excuse away some of Agnes's darkness.
Mm-hmm. She has, she's been brainwashed in a really, really forceful way.
I have a really important one, Ian.
Go for it. This is
last
one.
Before I forget.
Make it
good. Okay. Oh, Captain Roger Rio guy. He says, before they move forward in the ship, he says, take a seat and hold on tight. Mm-hmm. And I just felt super validated that I have been sitting, the fact that no one has been fucking sitting down. Even the captain is like, sit down. Get and you've been like, oh, down. There's stabilizers. Oh,
inertial dampeners. There are.
Oh, there's dampeners. And I'm like, sit down.
There's still no seat belt. So then what's the seat going to do? Just bring you closer to the floor.
Apparently it's needed. Even the captain said it. He says, take a seat. Hold on tight.
He's probably drunk. Right. With that, let's head to our final stop. The captain's ready room. Welcome to the captain's ready room, where we hear our ambassador's predictions for the rest of the season and bask in her Q-like glory if anything else she's previously predicted has come true. So I think the big one you predicted that came to fruition completely was the universe ending apocalypse stuff. So that's the vision that's been shown by O to Agnes. And it's confirmed by Nerissa as well. Yes, you nailed that on the head. If the AI survive, then it's the end of the universe. You like said that word for word last couple of episodes ago. What?
Yeah.
Have you seen this show already?
I haven't. No, and you guys talk about like seeing the previews and knowing who all is coming onto the show. I have none of that in my brain.
Unreal.
At all. I have accidentally come across some memes, which is how I knew 709 was even going to be in this.
Of course, yeah.
But I don't know if anyone else, you know, from the show is. I'm not sure if we're going to see Geordi or anyone else. I would love to. I think that'd be really, really cool. But yeah, that's one where I'm like, sweet. Got nice. That one.
You nailed it. Absolutely.
I mean, it makes sense when you think that there's a character like Agnes who has seen something so horrible that her only choice as a very seemingly passive person would do something so aggressive. Like, it has to be huge. Yeah. I still don't understand how we're looking into the future, though. And maybe I'm forgetting something about Star Trek Universe that I should
You're
be.
You're not.
Okay.
You have all of the information that you have been given so far.
Okay.
So what's your prediction for that then, actually? Why do you think that we're seeing the future? Well,
that's what I kind of wanted to chat about, is once we saw the, you know, horrible memory insertion, I'm thinking that there's manipulation on that level, where someone is manipulating memories somehow, or they're showing things that don't necessarily mean what they're kind of choosing what to show. Because in that flash, there was so much coming so quickly. And I even wrote this down as I was like, that was too fast. That was too fast. Like, if I was by myself, I'd be going frame by frame. Like,
yeah.
Okay. Uh-huh. Okay. And yeah. I'm trying to kind of evaluate what we're seeing. And it reminds me of how the show started, where we're seeing like planets imploding, et cetera, et cetera. And it's because of the synth situation. So yeah, I feel like it's just like a cover up of somebody or some organization that's sort of just deciding, this is how we're going to get what we want. And so we want to, you know, we want to paint the android or the synth life in this way. So this is how we're going to, you know, get what we want. And so we're going to justify it. How can we justify it? Oh, well, how can we make something that is undeniable? So for Agnes, the undeniable thing is these memories or this future being shown, this very, very real thing. So I don't know. I don't have an understanding of like how time travel potentially works in Star Trek. I don't know that it does. So I'm thinking it's just really cleverly placed information that is false somehow.
Interesting.
That's my prediction.
It is so noted. We had your prediction last week of what is on.
I get so nervous in this part.
You're killing it. Don't worry. You're statistically, this is statistically unlikely. I feel like we're in a time loop and you've got some of the information from the previous loops that we're missing out on. Like, is the ship going to blow up? Last week we had your prediction of what's going to happen on Soji's home planet. And now Albie hasn't heard this yet, but recap your prediction for that. Do you remember it?
No.
So you predict that there's going to be lots of synths and androids on this planet, and they're going to be on... They're on this planet, and that's why the Romulans want to get there to wipe them out.
Yeah.
And you think that lots have been made and they're all there. So we know that's what you predict for that. Anything else? What are the loose ends that you're hoping are going to be resolved?
Well, we head into the final three episodes.
Yeah.
We've got this Elnor situation, which means that they have purposefully, you know, brought in this sad kid that doesn't have anywhere to belong, and then they kicked him out immediately.
Still doesn't.
So he's just out there. Which likely means he's a MacGuffin of some kind. So I will say Ian lets slip something about the Rangers. So I'm assuming that that means that Seven comes back with Rangers, and then the Rangers are going to be showing up on Synth Planet to do some last second saving the day sort of a situation.
Let slip. The communicator flashes Fenris emergency or something like that.
Does it?
Yeah, it literally says Fenris Rangers SOS. It is so like plastered.
I must have blinked. Okay, yeah. Okay.
It is a blink and it's gone, but they weren't very subtle about it when you see it.
Okay. Except for if you blink, then you miss that.
Yeah, like it's about as subtle as a knife in the neck before you get stabbed.
So I think obviously that, I guess that's more obvious than I realized it was.
Great prediction.
Thank you. Well, I have predicted that the Fenris Rangers were going to come back.
You did? Yep.
So... That one seems to be tracking pretty well.
Captain Crandall, maybe not so much.
God, or maybe so
maybe he is the big bad behind it all. Ooh.
Maybe. Who knows?
In my notes, all caps, is who is this Captain C person?
I love it when you look into something that doesn't matter. I wish I had
so cool.
Him. Look over here. Don't look at him. Great. I think that's most of it. We've got the planet is the big one. The universe ending is the other big one.
I think I want to know. I feel like there's going to be some revelation about the end of the characters too. Like there has to be an end to the bad guys. So and the twisted siblings.
Yeah,
you know they're going to have their end somehow. So I'm curious how that's all going to kind of come out in the end and how public it will be, and if Picard is going to be reigned and heralded as the savior person and then be, you know, more accepted back into society, and are we going to end the series with another interview that where he's happy and he's back home with his Romulus buddies having a drink of wine and he looks out over the vineyard and there's Soji, you know, dancing
grapes
or whatever.
Amazing.
Picking grapes, yeah.
Cool.
Secreting liquids.
As
androids do.
Women do not secrete liquids. I will not have it.
Sure do.
Cool. Okay, with that, let's move into the thing I still don't have theme music for. 6 degrees of Trekkeration. Danae. This week is going to be slightly different. So Danae is going to do her standard come up with a word, but Albie is going to be the one to hop, skip, and transport us to Star Trek. Go on,
in
Danae.
Six moves or less.
Six moves
you
or less.
You have to get to something Star Trek.
But more than three.
Starting with beeswax candle.
Nice. Oh, I think I've got one.
I think I have two.
Sub-rosa?
Cool. So beeswax candles. We see candles in various episodes of Star Trek, including one that has a ghost living in a candle that Dr. Crusher shags.
That's exactly where I was going to go.
Holy shit! We talked about ghosts before you joined us today.
And also, the same ghost shagged her grandmother. So basically, there's like an incest thing that links back to creepy Romulan siblings.
This is a whole episode based around a sex candle and a ghost in Scotland.
I have a request.
Yes.
I know we're just doing Picard for now, but should we continue on with this podcast with more Star Trek content, which I know is a possibility, and watching specific episodes, can we please put that one on
you
the short list of episodes?
You want to start with Sub-Rosa? Yes.
You should watch all the like infamously bad Star Trek episodes.
Oh, please.
Well, that works for CinemaSins, definitely. We'll do Sub-Rosa, Tuvix, Code of Honor. We'll just pull apart all of the really crap ones.
You literally see a bit in that episode where Dr. Beverly holds the candle almost to her lady parts and lets it ravish her. Like, it is that bad.
She has an on-screen orgasm. She absolutely does.
On a planet that is supposedly a like replica of Glasgow, so you've got lots of Scottish people walking around.
But
it's very peculiar.
It's even better than this. It's aliens that have latched onto Scottish culture and then recreated Glasgow on a different planet.
I'm sorry that we're no longer doing Picard, everyone. We're going to go ahead and switch gears.
Yeah, we're getting straight into the most ridiculous Star Trek episodes. Love
there
it.
There you go. I did it four. Was that four?
That two, was three, two one. Steps.
No, that was one. You went I said beeswax candle, and you said there's a candle in this episode. That was one step. That was instant.
It's great. I love it. That's amazing. You put me to shame.
But you didn't
see
that turn it out that way, did you? With Dr. Beverly shagging a candle.
Nope. That was new information.
If it was Riker, you'd be like, yeah, I could see that, but not Dr. Beverly.
Nope.
Yeah.
It's great. It's like the one episode we give Gates McFadden to just lead, and she's like, you fucking really... Really?
I just was looking for outtakes for my job, and one of the outtakes that I was, it led me to watching this episode where Beverly is flirting with Picard. I don't remember. I messaged Ian about it.
Yeah, I sent that to you for some reason, okay. I think. Yeah,
I thought it was outtakes. I think we were looking at... I forgot about it entirely. Uh-huh. I never seen it. I was like, what is happening? And for whatever reason, Beverly flirting... was really off-putting to me. I don't know why, but I was...
Picard as well.
One other interesting fact about Sub Rosa is it is directed by Jonathan Frakes, who plays Riker.
Of course it makes perfect sense. Of course it is. The horniest episode of Star Trek.
It really is. Today you have to watch it, and I have to watch you watch it.
Okay, we'll bring Albie back for that one, definitely. Wow. Okay. This went off the rails.
I will return for that.
Quick.
Yes, it did.
I love it. That's amazing. yeah, good. There is nothing more to add to that. Thanks for listening, everyone. It's Make It So from me, and from Albert and Danae, it's whatever you want.
Punch it.
Oh, nice.
It's sharing an orbit with God is no small experience. That's a Troy to Picard quote.
Oh, it is. That's from Who Watches the Watchers.
Impressive.
Nice. The internet.
I super Googled it. Don't get too heavy.
What does God need with a ship? Albie, where can people find you in the world?
You can find me down in the candle store looking for some action, I think. No, seriously. No, you will not. I'm happily married. Do not tell my husband. You can find me mainly on Twitter, I guess, at Albert Hogan. And yeah. Thanks for having me. It's been so much fun.
It has been a pleasure. We love you, Albie. He's a beautiful man. Follow him for all of the thoughtful thoughts. And we will see you next week for episode 8. And as always, live long and prosper.
Thanks for listening. Want to connect with the show? Our hailing frequencies are always open through captainspod@cinemasins.com. Like, comment, and subscribe on your podcast player of choice, and be sure to visit cinemasins.com.
The Andorian had oddly shaped antenna.
Well, that just sounds rude.
Hey, are you saying that there's something wrong with oddly shaped antenna? Do all antenna have to conform to what you see as a beautiful antenna?
I'm saying, why point out that it's oddly shaped in the first place?
Because it might be, and they may be okay with that.
But why is there a standard of antennae?
That's just the Andorian society just forces this stuff upon us.
Can we talk about what an Andorian is?
Yeah, so they're the blue ones with the white hair and the blue antenna. Google it. It's easily Google. Rather than me standing here with wiggly fingers for antenna.
I do enjoy the wiggly fingers. That's nice.
Right, I've got to think of a name for you this week for the opening.
So are you just going through like different ships?
So I've had, different ships. So there was Intrepid and Endeavouring. And
Defiant.
Yep, that's a name of a ship.
I guess calling me Enterprise is just a little bit too strange. I'm guessing that at the end of this, like, I get to make a report of my experience. And my report is going to be this captain is a snarky bitch.
Me?
Mm-hmm.
I'm not a snarky bitch. You are a mutinous malevoler. I don't know what a malevoler is. I went for like the verb of malevolent to like malevol something.
Yeah. I'm calling it my new... This is my species. I'm a malevoler.
You're a malevoler?
Yeah. That's my species. Yeah. I like it.
Because the quiz I thought you were going for were like, hey, if we were a species from Star Trek, which one would we be? And you went, no, is the captain a dick?
No, I'm gonna poll the audience, you know. Well, like at the end of these things, the ambassador leaves and they like file a report of like what they experienced on their time on the ship. And then just...
Wait, that doesn't happen.
Yes, it does.
Well, what ship have you been on where that happens? I wouldn't have done this if I'd have known the pressure.
hey, listen, I'm your higher ranking officer person. Maybe you should have been more nice to me.
Only for this mission. From when we finish Picard, then I am going to promote myself to Ambassador Plus One.
Is that how it works? Do you get to promote yourself?
On this ship.
Oh, wow. I wonder how other guests are going to fare when you bring them onto your show.
But, I mean, I only have to put up with them for one episode, so they probably won't get the brunt. Like, if you go back to episode one, we were amazing. We were like,
supportive. Yeah, now we're like, this is so awful.
We have been in space for so long. She has fucked with all of the doors so that they only open when I walk away from them. So all of the doors are always open until I approach, and then they close. Ambassador, why did you bring ghosts onto this Enterprise?
It's part of my, they come with me as part of my race.
Entourage? With your race. Okay, so your species of malevolers, you have ghosts.
Well, yeah, I can summon a certain amount per day, per long rest.
Yeah, short rest, interesting. Interesting phrase that you chose to use there. We seem to be drifting very carefully into D&D.
It's when you're choosing your race, when you're, you know, you're building your character for certain games like D&D, you know, maybe, for example, you have traits that you get to do. And one of mine is to summon what some people consider ghosts. Other people might consider spirits to join me.
So are they all the same species, or do you get to pick the different species of ghosts, spirits?
It's a variety, yeah.
Oh, wow. So you could have like a Klingon and a Volk. Do you get to choose?
Yes. No, it's all random.
It's random? So you can turn up with a tribble? Like a furless tribble?
Yeah. And the crazy part is they all technically will band together, form my cause for a certain length of time, or until they're either dismissed or they lose their hit points.
Okay, cool.
Yeah, and if they do have to try to get along, but it does make for very interesting conversations. They don't talk a lot. I can kind of like hear intentions, you know. There's like a little bit of a telepathic link that we have with just very basic communication. But
that's gonna be really confusing for the Klingon. It's just like, get out of my head.
Yeah, Klingons are very guarded. So
yeah.
I've learned over time to just let them be. They don't really like being summoned, to be honest.
Oh man, they're so grumpy.
They're just like, I was perfectly happy where I was. The fuck are you doing? You know,
I was eating the heart of a Targ. I was murdering people, and now I'm on this ship.
Yeah,
what's
and
going
it's like
on?
It's like an ethereal projection. So, you know, debatable on whether they're dead. And this is their soul coming to fight with me or be here with me, just to, because sometimes I just want to hang out with them, so I'll just summon them for fun.
They're like ready for battle, and you're just like, no, I just wanted to talk about RuPaul, like the latest episode.
Yeah, if it's a Romulan and a Klingon and like, you know, another kind of more aggressive race, it makes for a really uncomfortable tea time. But
yeah. I keep breaking the cutlery and all of the crockery.
This is one of the reasons why I like to stay busy and do random stuff to your ship.
I've missed you today. It's strange.
I miss you
it's
too.
It's strange to hear you use your regular voice and not your D&D voice.
That's right.
Oh, no. Don't bring out the D&D voice.
Oh, my gosh. I'm so excited you're here. I can't stop looking at you on screen. I'm like, I can't believe you're here.
We should do like a little mini D&D. No, we cannot lose 4 hours and play D&D.
Will you shut up, Tilly? Honestly. She's been quiet all day, and the minute I start recording, she's like, meh, meh, meh.
She can feel your energy directed at us instead of, you know, the house. That's what happens with my dog.
Yeah.
I did a promotion for our podcast recently. I was wanting to tell our podcast listeners about this current survey that we're doing. So it's like, you know, go to our website, click the link, fill out the survey, help us out. Thanks. Kind of a thing. Super, super quick. Then in the background, ding dong, and my dogs just start freaking out. So for the next 30 solid seconds every time I started talking, they would start up again. And I ended up keeping the promotion because it was so funny, because I was like, are you wearing your comm badge? How come I have to wear my comm badge, but you don't have to wear your comm badge?
Because you are the ambassador and you will do as you're told.
I think we learned last episode that I'm actually a little bit higher ranking, sir. Are there rules about where it's supposed to go?
Just above your left nipple.
Okay. What if the nipple is actually closer to my abdomen because I've had a child?
I have a different perspective on Picard just from listening to the two of you.
I think Danae has brought me down a few notches.
Yeah, I think Danae talks a lot of sense. And in a way, I think you would be kind of like perfect script partners for this show, because you have the romantic in Ian and the pragmatist in Danae. And actually,
when did I become the romantic?
Exactly, because originally I would have said it was the other way around. But there you go.
Yeah. Groundbreaking there. Just Star Trek turns me into a romantic. We've definitely talked at length about Picard, but it tends to be a love fest.
Yeah, it does. It does. With some, you know, points of view, but generally it's a nostalgic love fest, yeah.
So his opinion has changed, though? Like, do you think, like, he's getting more practical about it, or he's getting worse about it?
I think he's...
Be honest. This is a safe space.
I think in terms of when he's on the podcast, he's been very polite about his response.
Raise shields.
Wait. Are you saving face, Ian? You're your Counselor Troy?
Yeah, basically. So I will, state the obvious. Wear a low-cut top and eat lots of chocolate.
Hell yeah. Are you wearing a onesie?
Yeah, exactly. I really am.
I would want to play Troy if I was going to actually try to play a character. I mean, ambassador sounds fun and everything, but I don't think I would be an appropriate ambassador. I feel like ambassador, you're supposed to be very serious and, like, you know, represent a cause and all that stuff, which I could do. But I also, I want to be more, like, involved in the crew.
Yeah, I could see that.
Would I be Q?
Yeah, well, that's one way to get involved with the Q. Just pop up with the crew. Just pop up wherever you want and mess people about.
Huh? What if I'm like a Q-Troy merge?
Can you imagine if Troy became Q? She'd actually be useful in an episode.
Ooh, harsh.
You are outnumbered, man.
I am super outnumbered.
fucked.
This was such a bad idea. I didn't even give you a rank, and I feel like I'm going to get chucked in the brig.
Yeah, mutiny incoming. Hey, Albie, can you meet me privately over there?
bring your disruptor with you.
Oh, no. I don't want to get disrupted.
He's going down.
Here's a deep cut for Ian, though. With my light, doesn't it look like I am Troy in Nemesis when she's doing the tactical station with the light on her face?
Oh yeah, super dramatic. And I wondered if that was a deliberate callback to the original series, like, because
it was just really bad directing, which I think
I mean, it was likely really bad directing, because that guy didn't know what a Star Trek was, did he?
No.
So bad.
No.
He thought he was directing Star Wars or something.
The editor of all the Bond movies.
Yeah, really interesting. Weird individual.
What's the name of this episode?
Nepenthe.
The hell does that mean?
We will get onto the definition of Nepenthe.
Is that a game?
Nope. It is a Greek word that we will... Don't Google it. Don't you be Googling.
I can do what I want. Don't I have you my Google. Own console.
Ambassador, you're out of line.
I know we're not in the sin section yet, but can I make a sin observation about the podcast?
Oh, no, yes.
Why the hell do you beam to 10 forward? What's wrong with your legs? If we can recreate history using a device on a crime scene, then why the hell can't we beam into 10 forward?
Isn't it the worst? It the Romulan scanner thing.
The biggest MacGuffin that ever MacGuffined, right?
My goodness.
It's pretty... That was a lot. That whole scene was a lot.
So funny story. I was listening to that while on the treadmill yesterday at the gym, and, like, was getting so wound up because you were getting so wound up, Danae, that I nearly went flying off the treadmill.
no. Should we have a warning on the podcast?
Should. I was about like, to say
do
that.
Do not operate heavy machinery while listening to this podcast. Is she like a bit like Kes or something? Can she tell the future? Because like she basically predicted the whole of this season in the first episode as well, didn't she?
Yeah, like she's definitely empathic. Like she predicted the android thing, the end of the universe thing being linked to androids. Like it's insane how much she's predicted.
They probably could have done with her on the show to help with the scripting, to be honest.
Finished Coda and I've just started Rogue Elements because I'm on a Rios binge. He is my favourite character in Picard.
Love Rogue Elements. It is my favourite Star Trek novel I've read in a long, long time.
Yeah, I'm only 3 chapters in, but it's...
Coda 3 is the opposite.
Yeah, I didn't like Coda 3 either. That, and then the victory lap that it does at the end was... And then the very, very last...
It felt like they rebooted it in the third book or something.
Well, that's the point, yeah.
No, but as in, like, rebooted their concept in the third book. Like, they had a different plan and they changed it. I don't know.
It feels like it, doesn't it? And how long were we on the bloody battle thing? Let's just kill everybody. Didn't like it.
No,
didn't like it. Felt rushed.
Oh,
right.
My God.
Sorry, we got knee-deep into Trek nerdery.
Oh, my God. That was hilarious. Just Barry. Kill everyone. That's like me when 7 of 9 showed up.
Yeah,
just fucking kill murder them.
Excellent.
Bum 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 ba-dum. Right, are we ready to record a show?
Let's do this.
Let me make sure I'm recording.
Wait, you had recording. Better have been recording for all of that. Jeepers creepers. So funny. Okay.
Let the trolling begin.
No trolling. I just literally heard what you said. Okay, are we ready to watch?
Yes.
Okay. 3, 2, 1, play.
Okay, sorry, hold on a second.
This is a great start, yeah.
Sorry, I hit play, but I had my player on 0.33 because I was trying to catch a frame for a sin on something earlier today.
Oh no.
So I was like, wow, this is taking a long time to start. It's just like
time on Star Trek.
Sorry.